Hello everyone. Thanks for the invite to speak. It seems I can't actually see any of you. So if you have a question, please just open your mouth and, you know, interrupt me. So this is based on this paper over here, which we will very soon upload V2 of with Amar, Alex, and Krish Ray. So the basic point is, oh, by the way, is my voice coming through well? I didn't check.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, great. So as by way of introduction, let's remind you that black hole entropy is pretty cool. It's like a piece of UV physics in the IR. But it's also kind of annoying because we know about the entropy, but not the microstates. Semi-classical gravity knows only about the entropy. So the natural question, of course, is can we find the microstates in some UV completion of gravity, for example, string theory? The answer is yes. Strominger, Wafa showed how to do it in 1996, and many others have followed with their own calculations. And all of these calculations are in the case when, cases where the black hole is at zero temperature, has maximal supersymmetry, and large charge. Today, well, I want to tell you about a sort of addition to this list, which is finite dimension, finite temperature, and has no supersymmetry. The caveat, and it's a two-dimensional black hole. The caveats are that we, unlike Strominger, Wafa, who found the microstates in a bulk description, we find it in a holographically dual description. And the other caveat is that this black hole is kind of finicky, and some people would argue that it's not really a black hole. Regardless, let us continue. So just as a sort of refresher, what does it mean to identify microstates? So one common way to calculate black hole entropy is to just calculate some Euclidean canonical partition function and vary it with respect to temperature. This is what Gibbons Hawking taught us many, many years ago, and we've continued doing it in many examples. And as I mentioned, this only tells us macroscopic properties about the microstates. It only tells us the entropy and any charges, energies, and so on. It doesn't really tell you about the microstates. And in a thermodynamic limit, we expect a grand canonical partition function. So in this talk, I'll be talking about a grand canonical partition function. So I will talk about that context, exhibits equivalence of ensembles, right? So the trace over the entire Hilbert space of e to the minus beta h times a fugacity to the charge localizes in the technical sense, but it is dominated by energies of states of a particular energy and charge, which are the expectation values e beta and q beta z here, with an e to the s. And the e to the s is genuinely a microcanonical partition function. It is the number of orthogonal states in a small window of energy and charge. So we will exploit this. And once we exploit this, the steps to identify a microstate are the following. First of all, we need to identify this Hilbert space H. This is quite non-trivial for a generic black hole in a bulk description. But whenever you have holography, the holography solves that problem for you because the boundary Hilbert space. And then we have to specify the e to the s dimensional approximately degenerate subspace which dominates the partition function in an independent manner. We shouldn't just say, okay, it's all states with the right energy and charges. Because to identify microstates, we want to do something new with the microstates. And if all you're specifying is the macroscopic properties, you're not really adding anything. And finally, important subtlety is that you should argue that these states are those of the black hole and not the exterior. This becomes especially important in the case of an asymptotically flat black hole, where there's just a lot of exterior. In asymptotically ADS black holes, it's not such a problem, but where asymptotically flat black holes has a lot of exterior and it can carry a lot of entropy. And this is much more than reproducing the partition function from a boundary calculation. So there has been an amazing slew of papers doing it in various examples, exact examples of ADS CFT, reproducing the partition function from a boundary calculation. But I'm trying to do something slightly harder, but in a simpler example. So let me summarize my results. There is a two-dimensional asymptotically flat black hole, which is a string theory background. Perturbations of this are not described by classical gravity, it's just described by some string theory. It can be shown that the string theory is dual to some matrix quantum mechanics system. A matrix quantum mechanics system is a quantum mechanical system whose degrees of freedom are just n times n matrices, and n is large. And in particular, n actually goes to infinity. It's not just large. So this is unlike higher dimensional examples of holographic duality where n is just large. So Kazakov and Seitlin in 2001 wrote down two candidate free energies. And what we will do is we will reproduce one of them. And therefore, we will also show which of these two candidates is the correct one. And the way we do this is we analyze the Schrodinger equation and find a black hole-like state in the MQM. What do I mean black hole-like? I mean, it is a metastable bound state that evaporates slowly. So asymptotically flat black holes are never stable to evaporation. They always evaporate. But they evaporate slowly in units of their mass. So it's a bound state that is metastable, not stable. We also argue that the entropic term in their free energy comes from the degeneracy due to some large symmetry group. And we argue that this entropy should be considered an entropy of the exterior. So this is the third point here that I emphasized. So the black hole doesn't have as high an entropy as Kazakov and Seitlin's results might have made you expect. So the 2D black hole, there's a 2D black hole, which is also called a cigar because look at it. And it's a string theory background. So there is some string theory where strings propagate on this background. And we are looking at the Euclidean cigar here. Okay. And this is dual by a string duality to what's called Sine-Liouville string theory. Okay. Sine-Liouville, and quite importantly, this string duality is also an example of ER equals EPR because the cigar, of course, has the cap and the horizon. The Sine-Liouville does not have a horizon. It lives on a cylinder, right? So all the entropy of the cigar, of the horizon, will be encoded in excitations of on the cylinder. So it will, Sine-Liouville string theory has a world sheet action, which looks like some Liouville action, plus, which I won't go into in detail, plus an interesting term, which is basically, which I will expand on soon. And the Sine-Liouville string theory is holographically dual to some MQM system. Okay. So some important properties. The temperature of the cigar is not a free parameter. Okay. It's fixed to 3 pi root alpha prime. Root alpha prime is, of course, the string length. And 3 pi is not a very big number. So you can see that the curvature radius of the cigar is order one in units of the string length. So this is why it's a irreducibly stringy situation. So in particular, we don't actually know how to do calculations of the entropy from the cigar itself. The calculation of Kazakov and Seitlin was done in the MQM. Okay. The mass of the black hole is a free parameter. Despite the temperature not being fixed, the mass is completely unfixed. So this is unlike higher dimensional black holes where there is a relationship between temperature and mass. Here there is no relationship. The mass of the black hole becomes dual to fugacity, the Z parameter here, for what are called vortex-anti-vortex pairs, which I will just explain in a minute, which in the MQM system is a fugacity for non-singularity of the MQM. So let me explain some of these words. So the interesting term in the Sine-Liouville theory is this guy proportional to Z. And what it creates is vortices on the world sheet. So consider a world sheet, which is a sphere. And the new term creates a vortex-anti-vortex pair. What is a vortex? A vortex is where the field winds around a point. Okay. In target space, this winding looks like you blew up a hole in the string and wound the hole around the temperature circle. Okay. And for topological reasons, vortices have to come with anti-vortices because look at it. And so Z is the fugacity for, or more precisely, Z squared is the fugacity for these pairs. Okay. Later, this is currently in the grand canonical ensemble. Later, we'll go to a fixed charge ensemble where we will fix the number of these pairs. Okay. So now let me describe the MQM system. So the MQM has one matrix degree of freedom X. X is a Hermitian matrix. I didn't write it down. And it is an n times n matrix, okay? And the Euclidean action of S looks, of the MQM looks sensible, it's trace of something, of a kinetic term plus a potential. But this potential has an interesting behavior. Near x equals zero, it looks like an inverted harmonic oscillator, okay? And then, of course, inverted harmonic oscillators are kind of bad systems. So you have to save it with a higher power of x, which is a g over n x to the 4. But the point is that the higher power of x comes with a very small coefficient. So it gets saved very, very far away at x of order root n. Okay. And in the end, the string theory really emerges when we take n to infinity, which means we take this saving x to the 4 potential away. We take it infinitely far away. There is a global symmetry in the system, which you can see from the action, which is just conjugation of X by a unitary V. Because a slightly pedantic point, which is kind of important, is that the group of Vs is not UN or SUN. It is what's called the projective unitary group, PUN. The reason is that V and V times a phase generate the same change of X, right? So the group is UN mod this phase U1. Which in terms of SUN is SUN mod its ZN center. And this is called P, the projective unitary group. An example of this is for N equals 2. The projective unitary group is PU2 is just SO3. It's SU2 mod Z2. In the double scaling limit, matrix Feynman diagrams, which are well known to have a genus expansion, become the string worksheet, with 1 over N becoming the worksheet cutoff. So you get the string theory really at n equals infinity, which from the point of view of the potential is sending the saving, the bit that saves you far away, infinitely far away. So the black hole entropy was calculated, the partition function was calculated by Kazakov, Kostov, and Kutasov in 2001. And let me spend a couple of minutes on the exact calculation they did. So you have the e to the minus s term here. Okay, that is what you expect, and then you integrate over matrices X because that is the degree of freedom. But you put a funny boundary condition. As X goes from zero to beta, which means as X goes around the thermal circle, it gets conjugated by a matrix omega, a unitary matrix omega. Okay, and now you integrate over omega with some potential for trace omega plus trace omega diagonal. Trace omega is, of course, the character in the fundamental representation. Trace omega dagger is the character in the anti-fundamental representation. So what this potential does is that it basically acts like a grand canonical ensemble for fundamentals and anti-fundamentals. In fact, the fact that omega lives in PUN will make sure that fundamentals and anti-fundamentals come in pairs. Fundamentals and anti-fundamentals of this omega are exactly like vortices and anti-vortices on the string worksheet. Okay. So Kazakov and Kostov Kutasov calculated this grand canonical partition function. Kazakov and Seitlin, what they did was very soon after, they did an inverse Laplace transform. They went from the grand canonical partition function to a fixed charge partition function. And I'll denote the charge by math BBK. K is the number of vortices and anti-vortices, or fundamentals and anti-fundamentals. As I mentioned, they come in pairs. And notice that I have a fugacity ZB here, which is, I've used almost the same notation as the fugacity for vortices and anti-vortices and anti-vortices in the Sine-Liouville model, but I've added this B. I will comment on that soon. But the two fugacities will be related, but they're not equal. They found, so in the fixed charge sector, Kazakov and Seitlin found that log Z takes this canonical form, S minus beta E. Okay, so this is what canonical partition function typically look like, with energy being K over 2 pi log of some unknown cutoff over square root K. They put the cutoff in by dimensional analysis. There is a alpha prime hidden in this equation. Okay, and the important thing is that it's at leading order, it's proportional to K, and there's a log root K, log 1 over root K multiplying it. And this is cut off. The entropy is 4 pi times energy. Okay. They gave another prescription which resulted in entropy equals 3 pi times energy. They couldn't decide from which one was preferred. We have decided that this one is preferred. And so I won't tell you about the second prescription, which is a bit strange anyway. Okay. So, that is the end of the introduction. So now let me start talking about the free energy, how we calculated the free energy by Hamiltonian methods. And before that, let me stop for questions.
Any questions? Okay, let's continue to the
introduction. Yeah, cool. So we want to calculate the free energy from a Hamiltonian calculation. We want to find some states, we want to calculate the energies, we want to count the states, and so on. The first thing we need to do then is to understand the Hilbert space. And the Hilbert space of the MQM model is a set of functions of a Hermitian matrix, psi of x, right? Now, x can be decomposed as u dagger capital lambda u. This capital lambda is entirely different from this capital lambda. This capital lambda will never appear again in our in this talk. So from now on, capital lambda is a diagonal matrix. Okay. And U is a unitary. So now a component of X, which is Xij, looks like U dagger IK, little lambda K. Little lambda K is an eigenvalue, UKJ. Right. The point is that the unitary never appears on its own. It always comes in this combination u dagger ik, ukj. So that every wave function can be written as some wave function of the eigenvalues, and which I'll call psi ig, and a rotational wave function, which depends on this combination of the unitary, of the matrix elements of the unitary. Okay, notice that k and k are always the same, whereas I and j, the outer indices, do not need to agree. An important point about this eigenvalue wave function is that because of measure factors in the change of basis, the eigenvalues become fermionic. So all of these are anti-symmetrized. All of these eigenvalue wave functions are anti-symmetrized. This is the usual van der Mond determinant for those who know. And the importance of doing this decomposition is that under the symmetry, which takes x to v dagger xv, the eigenvalues are untouched, which means that the wave functions of the eigenvalues are also untouched. So the symmetry acts entirely on this rotational bit. The Hamiltonian becomes a sum of free particle Hamiltonians for the eigenvalues. Notice that there's a minus, it's pi squared minus lambda I squared. This minus sign comes from the strange inverted harmonic oscillator nature of the potential. And I have taken n to infinity, so there is no lambda to the four term here. Plus a rotational Hamiltonian, which importantly depends on the eigenvalues. Okay. And this, the numerator here acts on u dagger ik ukj only on the k indices, only on the shared index. It doesn't act on these outer indices. Right. So tau k l squared gives the wave function itself and the wave function with k replaced with l. Okay. So, yeah. The reason this Hamiltonian is hard is that this is an interacting term. And so we have to deal with it in a clever way. So, well, let me first tell you about the singlet sector, which is what was solved first by Gross and Klebanow. The singlet case sector is the case when this rotational wave function is just a constant. Okay, which means that this PUN symmetry acts trivially on the wave function. And so that's why it's called the singlet. Now, in this case, there are a lot of fermions, a lot of eigenvalues, and they're all fermions. And we know how to deal with a lot of fermions, right? We just make a Fermi surface, Fermi C out of them. Each fermionic eigenvalue will occupy one cell in phase space of size 2 pi h bar. And we just write down a eigenvalue density, which just says that the energy of the each fermion is less than some Fermi energy minus mu. So the Fermi energy is minus mu here. Okay, so in a lambda p space, so this is phase space, it looks like a nice little guy like this. The point here is lambda equals, I think, square root of mu or something. Okay. And this saving quartic bit of the potential will cap off this eigenvalue, this Fermi C at large lambda. And as we take n to infinity, that cap goes off to infinity. So in the n to infinity limit, this is genuinely an infinite Fermi C that keeps extending like this. Okay. But the point is that we have to take n to infinity, keeping the position of this end constant. Okay, so this is called the double scaling limit. The eigenvalue density, so it's very often useful to talk not in terms of the density in phase space, but density in just eigenvalue space. So this is a rho of lambda, which looks like this square root function where lambda becomes zero at square root of 2 mu. Okay, and notice that far away from this edge, it just becomes a linear function. And so bulk closed strings, you can think of them as propagating on this Fermi surface. They get reflected at mu and then come back. This should be lambda equals square root mu here. They get reflected at the edge of the Fermi surface and come back. Or in phase space language, they go come like this and then they just keep going. And so the reflection just looks like the momentum changing sign. Cool. There is a second way to think about the double scaling limit, which is in terms of Feynman diagrams. So that it is the limit where the MQM Feynman diagrams that dominate any calculation you care about have order n faces. So this is a Feynman diagram of topology of a sphere topology. And this is in the double line notation common to MQM. And they just have a lot of faces. And basically in the double scaling limit, because we're taking n to infinity, the number of faces goes to infinity and then it looks like a smooth sphere. Okay, and so 1 by n acts as a cutoff on the world sheet. So that's why it needs to vanish for string theory to emerge. That's why n has to be infinity. Though see this paper by Amar and Aaron, which talks about how to deal with world sheets which have a cutoff. So the MQM parameters are bare parameters. So in this case, it kind of looks like a lattice system going to a continuum system. So you have to think about RG, the renormalization group flow from here to here. And whatever's happening here depends on MQM parameters. And whatever happens here depends on renormalized parameters. In particular, the Z, the fugacity in a sine level, is the fugacity in an MQM times some power of n. Okay, we have to keep this Z on the left-hand side finite. So ZB, so R, I should have said something about R. So R here is the radius of the thermal circle. So beta is 2 pi R. So for the case of interest, R is actually 3 over 2. And now a vortex on this Feynman diagram is just one of these faces wrapping around the thermal circle. So you can see that each sector with a fixed number of vortices has a slightly different way double scaling limit where you have to keep some phase where you have to put a vertex in some faces. Okay. So now let me, so that was about the singlet sector. So now let's get to the interesting part, which is the non-singlet sector. The non-singlet sector is when the rotational wave function is non-trivial. The simplest rotational wave function is u dagger ik ukj for some ijk. We're not summing over anything here. Okay. This is because this is the combination that turns up in the actual variable x. And an important thing is that this is like an adjoint wave function. Okay, this has got a copy of the fundamental and a copy of the anti-fundamental. Now, all rotational wave functions are made out of sums and products of these for some different indices ijk. Okay. Yeah. And then the symmetric action, the PUN action, which is a symmetry, which acts on x by v dagger xv, is a right action on these u's. So it acts on only these outer indices I and j. It doesn't act on the inner indices. Okay. So there's also a left action, which takes u to vu. This is not a symmetry. In fact, this is this action whose generators are actually appear in the Hamiltonian. And the point is that the left action acts only on the inner index k. It doesn't act on the outer indices I and j. So in some sense, when you think about it in terms of these actions, the outer indices and the inner indices kind of decouple. So you can rewrite u dagger ik ukj in this notation here, which focuses on the action. So this r means right action, l means left action. Now what are these pictures I've drawn? So this is a sort of Young tableau. So every box, white box, is a fundamental of un. Okay, and every green box is an anti-fundamental. So when I put these two together, it's a fundamental and an anti-fundamental, which is also known as an adjoint. And this u dagger ik ukj is an adjoint under both the right action and the left action. But notice that in the right action you have I and j separate, but in the left action you don't. This corresponds to the fact that the inner indices always match. Okay. So now let me, with those preliminaries, let me talk about the entropy. Again, let me stop for questions. Okay, let me go on. So now let's reproduce the entropy of Kazakov and Seitlin. So given all of these preliminaries, what does an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian have to look like? So of course, we have a fixed number of adjoints. So we have a fixed number of these u dagger u pairs, which go from 1 to math bbk. I apologize for there being two k's in this slide, but this notation clash happened. And yeah. Now, since the Hamiltonian does not act on these outer indices at all, they're completely free. But the Hamiltonian does act on the inner indices, the non-map bbk's. And so the wave function, the eigenstate has to have some non-trivial function of these inner indices, right? So this is what an eigenstate has to look like. So now the quick way to calculate the entropy is to just count the number of outer indices, because these are completely unconstrained by the Hamiltonian. So they will be free. So for whatever value you put, you're going to get the same energy. So it's going to be a degeneracy of a, so it's going to be the size of the number of independent wave functions in a degenerate subspace. So how many are there? Well, notice that there are n to the 2k of these outer indices, but also notice that they're indistinguishable. If I flip I1, J1 and I mat bbk, I j mat bbk, I can also make a similar flip on the k's and change the wave function in a concomitant way, and I get the same wave function back. There's nothing different about all of these indices are indistinguishable. So you have to divide by math bbk factorial. Okay. And this is just exponent of 2k log of n over capital N over square root k. This is exactly the entropy that Kazakov and Seitlin found, but with their undetermined cutoff being replaced by n. And it makes complete sense that n is the thing that turns up here, because the cutoff on the string worksheet is just n, right? So we have reproduced the entropy. An important point is that this corresponds to k copies of the adjoint in representation theoretic terms, which is a reducible representation. So why is a reducible representation degenerate? The answer is not. It turns out that this reducible representation is dominated by just one irreducible representation, which is a Young diagram that looks like this. The fundamentals and the anti-fundamentals. So there's a whole bunch of little boxes in here, which I haven't drawn. And you get the same shape on the fundamentals and the anti-fundamentals. And it kind of looks like a right angle triangle, but with a little bit of curvature. This was also found in a very nice paper by Panos, Betsios, and Ulga, which came out simultaneously with ours. So let me spend some more time talking about this entropy. So let's give a, I want to give a picture for this. So remember that I and J, I missed an important point. Let me go back a bit. Where is the decomposition? Yeah. An important point here is that U dagger, when I expand X as U dagger lambda U, this is not quite a unique expansion, because I can just rearrange the eigenvalues. So I have to order the entries. So lambda k is not just some arbitrary kth eigenvalue in some matrix. It is the kth smallest eigenvalue. So lambda 1 is the smallest, lambda 2 is the biggest, and is the second smallest, and lambda n would be the biggest. So lambda k is really the smallest eigenvalue. So an index k is really like a sort of coordinate for this x-axis in lambda space. Okay, so when I say that something has an index k, you should think of it as living at lambda k, at the position of the kth eigenvalue. So xij is a matrix that has one index at I and one index at j. And you should somehow think of it as having the I index being at the ith eigenvalue and the j index being at the jth eigenvalue. Okay. And xij, this is the simplest worksheet with a single vortex anti-vortex pair. And the the thing propagating through the worksheet in this time direction is xij, which kind of looks like a string, stretching from the ith eigenvalue to the jth eigenvalue, right? But we also know that xij is uki star u lambda k ukj. So the middle of the string somehow goes to the k, to the kth eigenvalue lambda k. So it goes from lambda I to lambda k to lambda j. Okay. Now the point is that I and j are completely unfixed. And there are just they're completely unfixed by dynamics. So they kind of live where the typical values of I and j would be order n, because that's just how many I's and j's there are. So they're very far off, because the nth an order nth eigenvalue is very far off, is a very big eigenvalue. Okay. Whereas lambda k is fixed by dynamics. So it is not infinitely far off. It will actually have to be pretty close to the smallest eigenvalue, as we will see. So this kind of in target space, this Feynman diagram, or this cut of the Feynman diagram, looks like a string that comes in from infinity, turns, and then goes back out to infinity. Okay, so this is kind of a cartoon for a stretched string picture that Maldacena verified in 2005 in much greater detail. And the KT entropy is the number of these endpoints. Okay, but these endpoints are infinitely, because it's the number of I's and J's, right? But these endpoints are infinitely far away, which means that that entropy is not the count of black hole microstates. It's a count of some uninteresting IR degrees of freedom, right? So for this reason, we will I argue that the entropy found by Kasekow and Seitlin is not really the black hole entropy. Cool. So this is the end of the entropy section. Let me stop for questions again. Yeah, looks like no one.
Any questions? I'll buy cookies to whoever asks the question.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me now talk about the energy. Okay, so this is the important part of the talk. Using the Schrodinger equation, I want to write down a wave function. Okay. So now, as I mentioned, these lambda k's, the tips of the stress strings, which is also the kth eigenvalue, where k is the inner index of this U dagger IK UKJ combination, kind of lives at some particular lambda k. So you can think of having k of these adjoints. So I will call them non-singlets or adjoints from number one. And each guy lives at some place in the eigenvalue distribution. You know, there's some eigenvalue here, there's some eigenvalue here. And in general, it need not be a localized. It could have some interesting wave function, which we've drawn by these random squiggles. Okay. So each, and these purple dots are are the positions of these string tips. Now, an important point about this picture is that this is the Fermi C in eigenvalue space. And I have drawn an end to the Fermi C. Okay, the end happens at square root lambda equals square root 2 pi n. But n is infinity in the string theory. So what I've done here is I've made n finite. Okay, which is kind of the wrong thing to do. But we will fix this later. We will take n to infinity in the last step. So this is an order of limits issue. Okay, so I am explicitly keeping n finite for the calculation and then take it for infinity at the end. Now the Hamiltonian, acts on all these little purple dots, which are string tips, has two terms. One, there's a direct term which treats each little purple dot separately. And there's direct term, in the case when there was just one of these string tips, this was very nicely analyzed by these folks, Marchesini Onofre, and then Maldsena, and then Fitkovsky. Okay. Yeah. And one might expect that, you know, you take the solution from one string tip, and then you just copy it for every string tip and then push them far away so that they don't interact very much. You know, that's a possible guess for the eigenstate with a lot of string tips. It turns out that pushing the dots very far away gives a large contribution from the direct term, from the term that acts on each one separately. It's like a potential which scales with the position. And if you bunch them up, you get a large cross term, which is the interaction term. So it's actually the sort of energy at a finite end is always much bigger than the Kazakh value that Kazakh and Seitlin found. Okay. So clearly this answer is not very good. This A new idea is that bunch all of those string tips up into the first square root k eigenvalues. Why square root k? It is square root k is the minimum allowed by the dominant irrep. You can't bunch them up further without squashing the irrep. Okay. Now this has a huge energy because I told you that if you push the tips too close, they start interacting. So I put them right on top of each other. You would expect the energy to diverge, right? But this is not, this depends a bit on the state of the tips. There's a huge energy, unless the states is singlet under u of square root k times u of n minus square root k. Okay, this is the left action that acts on the string tips is generators appear in the Hamiltonian. And u of square root k is the number of eigenvalues I shoved all of these guys into. So what I'm saying is that it is singlet under all transformations which swap any of these two tips. Okay. And it's also singlet under u of n minus square root k because there's no string tips here. And so there's nothing for those terms to act on. And why does this work? It works because the Hamiltonian is the sum of positive operators, which are the squares of these generators. And I just sent a whole bunch of the positive operators to zero by taking this singlet under this subgroup. This is a good idea, and it drastically lowers the energies, but you still get that the energy is k log n k to the plus 3 over 2. Whereas Kazuko and Cyclin found n times k to the minus half. So it's still a little bit too big. And staring at the expression tells you that the problematic bit is that there's some domain wall here. The domain wall has a high energy. Basically, what happens is that the empty spot here, the eigenvalue here, and the string tip here kind of interact. Okay, and they're very close by here. There's just a lot of string tips and then a lot of empty spaces, and then they keep jumping back and forth, and that causes a lot of energy. So you want to keep the empty eigenvalues far away from the string tips. So how do you do that? Well, you just change the eigenvalue distribution. You blow up a hole in the eigenvalue distribution so that there's a bunch of eigenvalues here. There's root k eigenvalues here where string tips live. And then the rest of the eigenvalues are here where they don't live, where they just, and there's a gap between them. So now the interaction between the string tips at this edge and the empty spaces at this edge becomes very low. Okay. And the rotational wave function, the wave function of these string tips. So just to be clear, because we are in a classical approximation where the fermions form a Fermi C, this picture is almost an exact representation of the wave function. You know, it just says that you have to have a coherent state for every phase space cell that lives here and a coherent state for every phase space cell that lives here. And there are no coherent states for phase space cells between in this gap. It's not quite the wave function, because I also have to tell you the state of the string tips. And the answer is basically that, you want a singlet, nu here is square root k. And so the way you make a singlet out of an adjoint is you take a trace. You take a trace over little k being from 1 to nu. Okay, so this guy is a singlet under the subgroup. And you just take k copies. Okay, and then our point about the fact that k copies of the adjoint are dominated by say, a single irrep means that this guy lives in is a two leading order in a single irrep. Okay. And so this is a complete description of the wave function that we find. Okay. It has this gap in the eigenvalue distribution, which is not there in the singlet sector. And in some sense, the point is that, it is significantly different from this ansatz here. This ansatz makes sense when MathBBK is a small number, say it's 1. In that case, you can exactly solve it, and you can find that there are eigenstates of the right energy that live. But when we send MathBBK to a large number, but we won't make it scale with n, so it will be large but not order n, we find that there's this new state that dominates, which kind of where the string tips actually back react strongly on the background Fermi C. Okay. And remember, the Fermi surface was like the space on the string theory. So we are actually changing the space of the string theory in a non-trivial way. And this is going to be the minimum energy state at finite n. As you take n to infinity, the number of empty spaces kind of grows. And then basically it starts, this configuration basically starts evaporating. These string tips start jumping out here and then going off to infinity. So you get an at n equals infinity, you find that this state evaporates. And this is kind of similar to how asymptotically flat black holes never dominate a canonical ensemble. So now let me tell you a bit about the energy. The calculation of the energy is incredibly simple. Okay, so state is a singlet under some subgroup. okay, which is this u nu times u n minus nu. So it is annihilated by all of the generators where both k and l live in u nu or u n minus nu. So they live in u nu if k and l are both less than nu. They live in u n minus nu if k and l are both bigger than nu. So the only ones that don't annihilate the state are the ones where k is in the is less than nu and l is greater than nu, or the other way around. Okay, and and then the energy, the expectation value of the energy, just becomes a sum over, sum of 1 over lambda k minus lambda l whole squared, which was what turned up. The expectation value of all these tau kls becomes just 1, the squares of these generators. And so it's a fairly simple sum where lambda k is, where k is less than nu and l is greater than nu. And you can just basically do it and you get the Kazakov-Seitlin value of the energy. This is literally the whole calculation out here. The only thing I did was I put in some value for lambda nu and lambda nu plus 1, the position of the right wall and the left, the right wall of the left blob and the left wall of the right blob. Okay. So this is exactly the value of the energy formed by Kazakov and Seitlin. And at finite end, it genuinely dominates the canonical ensemble. Further, now it's not quite an eigenstate, it's an approximate eigenstate. But the variance in the energy is like square root of k, which is much less than the expectation value squared. So the standard deviation is fairly small units of the energy. So it's an approximate eigenstate. So this is the wave function that we have found. So now it is not an exact eigenstate. Now we take finite n to infinity. As I mentioned, at n to infinity, this bound state, this state starts evaporating. These string tips kind of jump out into the empty space and then go off to infinity. Okay. But even then, it is not stable, but it is metastable. The evaporation time, which you can estimate using the standard deviation energy, goes as some goes polynomial in this k variable, in the number, in the size of the blob. Okay, and so that's large in units of the mass. So it evaporates slowly in the units we care about. This evaporation time, you can think of it as like some sort of an analog of the page time. This has not been cross-checked against a bulk calculation, but it is a fairly, this calculation is reasonably clear in the, at least in the MQM side. Cool. So this is the main results. I will go to a discussion. Let me just get through discussion and then we can have questions. So just to remind you, so this state, which we call the hole in the world state, because we've blown up a hole in the world here. So this is like the spatial direction of the string theory. So it's like we've blown up a hole in the spatial direction or in the world. Okay, it's kind of like a quantum mechanical black hole. Why do I say that? First of all, it's a bound state of a lot of non-singulates. So a black hole is a bound state of a lot of matter particles, right? To have a non-bound state, you require the adjoints to be spread out over a large region. And so there's some sort of a Schwarzschild radius where if you spread the adjoints out very far, they don't collapse. But if you get them in to a certain radius, if you get them in close enough, they do collapse. It is metastable and evaporates slowly, exactly like a asymptotically flat black hole. And when we take n finite, it actually becomes stable. So this is exactly like a black hole. A black hole in asymptotically flat space evaporates, but a black hole in a box like ADS need not evaporate. It can be stable. Okay, so it is quite literally as close as our field has come to an explicit quantum mechanical black hole microstate. Okay, it's an actual wave function that you can write and has these properties of a black hole. Okay, let me just mention the entropy. As I mentioned, that the Kazakov-Seitlin entropy counted some uninteresting IR degrees of freedom. This is not quite, this is related to the fugacity getting renormalized between the MQM and the string theory. But in some sense, there is still an entropy of the black hole. And this entropy comes from permuting the K adjoints. Okay. So it doesn't matter, you know, if it's a black hole being formed from collapse, you can push, throw in the K adjoints in any order you choose. Okay. So this kind of seems like a black hole entropy, which is K log K, which is much smaller than the value that Kazakov and Seklin found, which was divergent in the double scaling limit. But this is finite in a double scaling limit and kind of looks like the mass, which is proportional to this K. Now, as I mentioned, the two-dimensional black hole is very finicky. But these results could be relevant for less finicky or higher dimensional black holes as well. So many higher dimensional black holes have a sector with some cigar factor, okay? Stringy black holes. And the absence of the duality still exists, that there is still a duality between the string theory on the cigar and the Sine-Liouville theory, except that the Sine-Liouville theory is no longer C equals 26. So it's not a string theory on its own, but the Sine-Liouville theory on two dimensions plus the internal space, which is the higher dimensional space, together is a C equals 26 string theory. So it's an actual string theory in that case. But our results are technically only valid when Sine-Liouville is C equals 26. So it's an actual string theory on its own. In particular, the MQM is not dual to the Sine-Liouville when C is not equal to 26. But this string tip picture is very suggestive. And one hope might be that we can understand Sine-Liouville theory for C not equal to 26. So Sine-Liouville theory in the context of higher dimensional black holes. So in terms of these bound states of string tips, okay? This is something that we have been thinking about since we published the paper, though the progress is, there's not all that much to report. But this is something that we think is a fairly important and promising direction. Finally, there's a fun fact that the entropy that I mentioned, the K log K entropy, is related to some random walk problem called Motkin walks. Motkin walks, a K-colored Motkin walk is just a random walk in K plus one dimensions, which is always in the positive quadrant of this K of R K plus one. Okay, positive quadrant just means all coordinates are positive. Okay, so here the red Motkin walk is always in the positive quadrant, or rather, and it's legal. And this gray one kind of goes into E1 equal negative, so it's illegal. And it turns out that the entropy that we mentioned is just the number of pairs of K-colored Motkin walks with K steps. One hope that this could be some sort of a string bit picture. String bits, the entropy of strings at high temperatures are often described in terms of these little random walks and random walks where the string is kind of a bunch of straight lines. And you can think of each straight line as like a string bit. So this could be indicating something, though we don't have any particularly specific ideas about this. Okay. So to conclude, we found an explicit black hole-like state in the MQM, whose wave function can be shown with this picture, where there are a bunch of eigenvalues on which no adjoints live. And then there's a bit in eigenvalue space where there are no eigenvalues at all. And then there's another blob of eigenvalues where adjoints live, and the adjoints live in a singlet state under the subgroup that permutes all of these eigenvalues. So future directions would be scattering stuff of this bound state. So maybe that might give some new understanding of Sine-Liouville model. Checking the evaporation time that I mentioned from the bulk, understanding Sine-Liouville theory as a bound state of string tips from the bulk side. This might be very relevant for higher dimensional black holes. And finally, another direction is taking finite n seriously. So we used it quite importantly in our calculation to keeping n finite till the last step. But at finite n, sometimes the bulk is weird. It's a worksheet theory where the worksheet has a cutoff. But you know, because of the work of Amar and Aaron, we know something about how to deal with these theories. So can we learn something using finite n? Yeah, thank you. This is the end of my talk.
But first, let's thank the speaker. Any questions before I make you guys ask questions, or I get some questions out of you? Okay, if not, immediately, any questions? So first of all, like, Rob is super excited about the talk, but he's director, so like sometimes his schedule is great. So I'm sure he'll try to like catch the recording or whatnot. But maybe for the interest of those who are watching patiently, but maybe aren't exactly in this area, can we like kind of switch gears towards a more informal discussion of like the scope of this research program for like the non IFM community folks? Like, you want to find use specific examples of dualities to understand like microstate counting for non-supersymmetric black holes, or what's the bigger picture for you?
The bigger picture would be to is basically the last thing I mentioned, which is that if you can understand sine Liouville theory is something where we can do calculations, but the Lorentzian picture is a bit mysterious. Okay. And in some sense, so we don't really understand what the strings are doing in a very good way. Okay. And if you can think of it as a bound state similar to this, okay, then we can actually, write down wave functions for like ensembles of strings, okay, which would be dual to black hole microstates via this FZZ duality. Okay, and that would be true in higher dimensional black holes, which are kind of less finicky. You know, there are many questions about how black holey this particular two-dimensional guy is. In particular, it's kind of has some integrable type structure, so it doesn't have Lyapunov exponents, or it's believed not to have Lyapunov exponents, or chaos. But higher dimensional ones, you do expect them to have chaos. And so if you can understand something about the microstates of those non-supersymmetric higher dimensional black holes, that I think is would be an extremely deep and cool thing to do, basically.
And what exactly makes what feature exactly lets the lower dimensional computation generalize to the higher D? You have this cross sheet perspective, I guess.
Yeah, basically, we have this picture in terms of string tips. So, you know, the calculation was done entirely in MQM, but the way it worked out has a natural analog in the world sheet theory. And this has been checked in detail in the case of one adjoint, which is one of these string tips, okay, by Marlusina in 2005. So if we can use this wave function as a sort of ansatz to understand sine Liouville theory in real time, sine Liouville theory is only understood in Euclidean time, okay? So if you use this wave function to understand sine Liouville theory in real time, then basically as a natural ansatz here, which is just you take these stress strings and then just glob a bunch of them behind what's called the sine Liouville wall. The details of this have not been worked out by us. We've been thinking about how to work through this. It's not a simple problem, but I personally have hope. My collaborators can add something if they want, but yeah.
Perhaps I can also mention a slightly different direction, which is that so there exist other more complicated matrix quantum mechanical models that are dual to higher dimensional emergent geometries, the most famous of which being BMN, BFSS, and IKKT. And there are conjectured black hole microstates in, for example, BFSS, that have a very similar qualitative flavor, i.e. they're bound collections of D0 brains that slowly evaporates. However, the world sheet picture for these higher dimensional matrix quantum mechanics models is much less clear than it is for these for this simpler sequels one picture where there's a very explicit world sheet dual to the matrix quantum mechanics. And perhaps one can extract some lessons from the stringy picture of this evaporation process and apply it to these higher dimensional models, which are in some sense more black hole like black holes that have chaos, that have known entropies and energies that match higher dimensional black holes, and etc.
Yeah, thanks for that. That was a good. Yeah, completely forgot about that. But yeah,
that's for any further questions from the local people. If not, let's thank Vanak again.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah, it was a pleasure.